I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf disclosed today that he has early-stage prostate cancer. The governor says he's been undergoing tests for months and is making the diagnosis public now for several reasons.
Wanted to be open, say, didn't want any speculation in case anybody heard anything. I do have it. Second, to make sure that everybody knows that having detected it early, that there really isn't any impairment, and whatever the treatment that I'm going to get is not going to interfere with my ability to perform my duties as governor.
Wolf added that he wants to use the instance of his own illness to remind Pennsylvanians that, quote, routine medical checkups really do matter. Wolf says he'll take a few days off and get treatment in the York County area sometime in the near future. He says he will not require chemotherapy as part of his treatment. It's a nationwide epidemic, but over the past decade, thousands in New Jersey alone have died from a heroin-related overdose. Expanded use of the overdose-reversing drug naloxone, often called Narcan, is helping more and more drug users survive. WHYY's Alana Gordon reports on a new program to offer help to those right after they've been revived.
If Narcan is administered soon enough, it can reverse on the spot a life-threatening overdose. A lot of police units in New Jersey now carry it, as do people who are at risk of overdosing. Connie Green with Barnabas Health in Monmouth County says the life-saving tool is critical, but by no means breaks the cycle of addiction.
Doing Narcan reversals alone without intervention was just a revolving door of repeated Narcan reversals.
Addiction is complicated. Hospital staff say a lot of people leave after they've been revived, or they may not know where to turn to if they are interested in treatment. Green and others view these moments as missed opportunities. So here's where John Brogan enters the picture.
You know, I was struggling with this thing since the time I was 17, 18 years old. So it gives me close to 20 years experience bouncing in and out of treatment centers, bouncing in and out of jails.
Brogan is one of 14 recovery specialists who are part of a new state-funded pilot in Ocean and Monmouth counties. He responds within minutes to the ER, meeting people who've overdosed. He says bringing in his shared experience is powerful.
Because there's a whole culture of people out there that do recover from this disease. It's just not as talked about as much as the epidemic or pandemic is growing right now.
But Brogan says getting into detox and figuring out the right treatment is nearly impossible on one's own. So he follows up. The pilot program launched a few weeks ago, and already a majority of those offered the chance take the help. The specialists are in two hospitals now. They plan to move into three more. I'm Alana Gordon, WHYY News.
Pennsylvania and federal investigators are looking into a fistfight between powerful labor leader John Dougherty and a non-union contractor at a Philadelphia worksite in January. As WHYY's Bobby Allen reports, finding a prosecutor willing to accept the case has not been easy.
Union boss Johnny Dock has said he was visiting a construction site in South Philly when he asked a contractor to remove a Local 98 sticker from his truck since he wasn't using union electricians. Words were exchanged, including threats to Dougherty's family, the union leader says, and the contractor, Joshua Kesey, was left with a broken nose. But Kesey's attorney has a different story.
He bought the truck from a union guy that happened to have the sticker on it.
Attorney Bob Mazenter says when his client was asked to remove the bumper sticker, he said it would be no problem.
That was the beginning of the end for him because they started taking the sticker off, and then Dougherty got more agitated, and then he attacked him, hit him with a combination of left to the right, broke his nose.
According to the police report, after Dougherty threw a punch at Kesey, three men with him continued to punch and kick the contractor before driving off. Police recommended that the city's district attorney's office press charges, but DA Seth Williams, who's received campaign contributions from Local 98, said he was too close to Dougherty for his office to prosecute. University of Pennsylvania law professor Claire Finkelstein, who leads an ethics center, says something else might be going on.
People do not want to be perceived as attacking labor unions, and so they're concerned about the political impact of taking on a prosecution like this.
The state attorney general's office is now handling the case, but AG Kathleen Kane says she can't personally be involved since she, too, has received money from the union. Attorney Mazenter says it seems political donations are getting in the way of justice.
If I contributed $500 to Seth Williams' campaign, and I get arrested for aggravated assault, should I call him up and say, listen, I gave you $500, there's a conflict, don't arrest me?
One unknown in the case is why the FBI is involved. Jim Reed, who runs an auto shop on South 3rd Street, had some surveillance footage of the fight. He recently had some visitors.
Two FBI agents came over, just guys with suits on.
Daugherty's union has the highest spending political committee in the state, so the outcome of the case could have a big impact. A decision from the state AG's office could come down soon. For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
This note, Local 98 represents WHYY engineers and has supported this station. There's a nationwide shortage of psychiatrists, and the problem is especially acute in rural areas. From WHYY's Behavioral Health Desk, Ann Hoffman looks at the problem in rural Pennsylvania.
There are only 10 psychiatrists for every 100,000 people in Pennsylvania, and they tend to cluster in urban areas. Some don't accept insurance at all. Vicki Caffrey is the Director of Medical Services for the Outpatient Department at Behavioral Health Associates, a nonprofit healthcare foundation in Weisport in the Lehigh Valley. Ask her what she'd do with unlimited resources to improve things for patients, and it doesn't take her long to come up with an answer.
I'd hire 5 more psychiatrists.
Right now, there's just one who works with their organization. He splits his days between the Weisport facility and other agencies and hospitals. Years ago, Caffrey says there were none in the area. Rural areas on the whole have fewer psychiatrists, but often see a greater need. Rural Pennsylvanians have fewer financial resources than urban ones, according to a 2007 report from the Brookings Institution. The area has been losing union jobs for years, and long distances can make people feel isolated. Those factors can make symptoms worse. Caffrey says it can take patients anywhere from 3 to 6 months to get their first appointment with a psychiatrist. In the meantime, she can refer them to a crisis center or other mental health agencies in the area. But she says those too are strapped for resources.
You know that they're in a situation where they really need the help immediately. And if you don't give it to them, hopefully things will be okay, at least for a while, until you can get to them, or they can find somebody else.
Mary is a patient who suffers from bipolar 2 with major depression, and she lives in rural Susquehanna County near the border with New York. She began accessing care 30 years ago.
It was actually my son, who was 10 at the time, saying, I want my mom back. You start looking for help.
There's only one psychiatrist Mary can see in her area as well. Although overall she's had good experiences with care in Susquehanna County, last summer Mary was in crisis and had to wait longer than she would have liked to see a psychiatrist for a medication change.
It's difficult. You rely on friends. You rely on the network that you have set up.
Mary got through her crisis after the right adjustment, but some people see their situations escalate.
One of the unfortunate aspects of shortages could be that somebody's minor or modest problem could become intensified and become a more major problem.
That's Dr. Richard Silbert, who's a professor of psychiatry at Commonwealth University. He notes that alternatives do exist for people in crisis, like community mental health clinics and general practitioners. But a psychiatrist is more knowledgeable about prescribing the right medication. Silbert says it's hard to attract and retain psychiatrists to rural areas.
Many psychiatrists find it more advantageous to work in a large metropolitan area, whether it be Philadelphia, New York, Washington, D.C.
He says psychiatrists often self-select areas with easy access to universities and an urban lifestyle. And while fewer people are entering the profession and many existing psychiatrists are nearing retirement, Silbert says the shortage is most acutely felt in rural areas. He's interested in telepsychiatry as part of a potential solution, where patients can talk to a psychiatrist through a secure video chat. While telepsychiatry is on the rise in Pennsylvania, Dr. Silbert concedes that it can't meet every need.
There's some concern that telepsychiatry would lose some, warmth or human contact.
And for now, Vicki Caffrey says she wouldn't advise anyone with a mental health problem to move to Weisport.
All those things that you're so used to in the city, that's just not available here.
Ann Hoffman, WHYY News.
Taking a look at this evening's headlines, a New Jersey lawmaker wants to lower the state's drinking age to 18 from 21. Republican Morris County Assemblyman Michael Patrick Carroll recently introduced the measure, saying it's wrong that an 18-year-old can serve in the military but can't be permitted to purchase alcohol. He concedes that the fear of losing federal money has stopped previous efforts to lower the drinking age. Federal law calls for cutting highway funding for states that reduce their drinking age below 21. That measure was sponsored by the late Frank Lautenberg, a New Jersey Democrat who backed it during his first term in the U.S. Senate. Pennsylvania's State Police Commissioner says 29 cadets have left the State Police Academy in connection with an investigation into possible cheating. Commissioner Tyree Blocker gave the news to senators today during an Appropriations Committee hearing. Blocker has provided few details about the investigation, including what kind of cheating was suspected since disclosing the existence of the investigation February 4th. Cadets are subject to a battery of written tests. Blocker has said a full and comprehensive investigation by the Internal Affairs Unit began in December and involved dozens of interviews and an extensive collection of evidence. 61 degrees at 6:17. You're listening to NewsWorks tonight on WHYY. A tornado watch remains in effect in our region until 11 this evening. Wind gusts of 35 miles an hour. Periods of rain heavy at times tonight. Low overnight around 48 degrees. Tomorrow, cloudy, breezy. Thursday's high 53. And then sunshine returns on Sunday. Windy, high 42 degrees. Still ahead, finding a new home for a growing circus school isn't easy.
People will tell us they have buildings that have high ceilings, and they mean 12-foot ceilings. They don't really know what high ceilings mean to an aerialist.
Come one, come all. NewsWorks Tonight continues on WHYY.
You create the number one sitcom on television, you'd think you can rest easy, yeah? No.
I'm constantly in a mild state of anxiety trying to get it right with a limited amount of time and a limited amount of intelligence.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, Chuck Lorre, creator of The Big Bang Theory, on the occasion of its 200th episode, next time on Marketplace.
Marketplace follows NewsWorks Tonight at 6:30 this evening on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, the Rutgers Camden Professional MBA Program. Designed for working professionals, the Rutgers Camden Professional MBA is a 21-month cohort-based program with classes held on Saturdays in two convenient locations, Camden and Princeton. The next cohort begins this fall. Rutgers PMBA will host an information session on Saturday, March 12th at 10:30 a.m. at the Cherry Hill Library. Details at pmba.rutgers.edu or 856-225-2700.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Bruce Graham is the Dean of Philadelphia Playwrights. He's been active for more than three decades with 21 of his plays produced across the country. He's having a banner year here at home with two world premieres this season. Rizzo, about the controversial Philadelphia police chief and mayor, debuted last fall. Now, Funny Man, about a comic with a sad life, is at the Arden Theater. NewsWorks Theater blogger Howard Shapiro chatted with Bruce Graham about the newest play.
Bruce Graham, Funny Man, is about a comic, but he's not so funny.
No, he's not.
He's not so funny. How come you got the idea to write about a comic who is very sad as a person?
Well, I did comedy for years and worked a lot of clubs with a lot of comedians.
You started out in comedy, didn't you?
Yeah. And they are sad people for the most part. They're slightly damaged. That's why we go into comedy. I'm lucky. I don't think I'm as damaged. That's why I got out of comedy, I guess. Yeah.
So here you have this guy. His daughter says that she's never, ever even heard him laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Yet he's apparently made a nation laugh. Essentially, how did you decide what kind of play you were going to write? Was this going to be a funny play about a sad guy? A sad play about a sad guy? How did you make that decision?
I never sit down and really think about tone when I start the play. I'm much more interested in the character progression and the story. And the tone kind of finds itself, and sometimes you don't find it the first time. You get into rehearsal and go, okay, that's got to go. That's from another play.
Was Funny Man modeled after anybody in particular?
A whole conglomeration. I've got Jackie Gleason. I've got Milton Berle. I've got Burt Lahr, Buster Keaton. a little bit of everybody, whatever I could use, because I've always been fascinated by it. There's some Bob Hope. I just rephrased the line where she says, where he, Junior says, go to Florida, fish. Fish don't laugh. I mean, that's taken right from Bob Hope.
Right. Junior, as we should explain, is the agent of the gentleman named
Chick Sherman.
Chick Sherman, who is the funny man in the play that Bruce Graham wrote, and that's at the Arden. I wanted to ask you about something that you write about in the play. A producer, just off the cuff, calls Chick a comedian, and he immediately bounces on him to correct him.
Yes.
He says, I'm not a comedian, I'm a comic. Right. Could you explain what Chick tells people?
Sure, and I stole this, I think, from Red Skelton, as a matter of fact, because, you know, Red Skelton did jokes, but you were laughing more at the way he was talking, and he says, you know, a comedian says funny things, a comic says things funny. And you take, say, Burt Lahr, who didn't do jokes, but he would put the twists and roll the eyes and do all that stuff. And that's how he got the laughs. And Bob Hope and Jack Benny and that ilk would just stand in front of a microphone and write pre-written jokes with punchlines. So that's kind of the difference there.
That's the difference.
Yeah.
So let us get this clear to everybody. I'm going to say a few names, and you tell me.
Okay.
Are they comics or are they comedians? I was actually going to start with Red Skelton, but now that we clearly have identified him as a comic. Lucille Ball.
Comic.
She didn't, but she had things written for her.
Yeah, but it was her, the faces and the style and all that stuff. She wasn't out there doing punchlines. That was all character stuff.
Carol Burnett.
Comic.
Jerry Seinfeld.
A comedian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
A smart comedian, though. He reacts. That's why his show lasted so long. He didn't take center stage. He reacted to people.
Right.
That's why Jack Benny lasted so long.
Same reason.
Yeah. And Mary Tyler Moore, you know.
Roseanne Barr.
Obnoxious. Oh, sorry. I worked for her.
I was going to bring that up.
I hear she's mellowed. A comedian. Yeah.
Not somebody who gets by on the way she does it, but what she says.
No, the material and the character she created. You know, I actually show clips of her to my stand-up class because some of her stand-up was really good.
Right.
And it was kind of groundbreaking what she was doing.
Bruce Graham, it's been great talking
to you.
Always
a pleasure, Howie. Thank you.
Much luck with Funny Man.
Thank you.
Newsworks Theater blogger Howard Shapiro speaking with Bruce Graham, whose Funny Man is at the Arden Theater in Philadelphia. The couple behind the Philadelphia School of Circus Arts is launching a brand new program for students who want to go pro. The intensive 3-year curriculum is set. The staff has been hired. But one pretty important detail remains. Where will all this take place? As WHYY's Aaron Moselle reports, finding the right location hasn't been easy.
From here, she's just going to release the top knee, pull the tail across her head, and rehook the knee. So it is an unlocked ending to a rotational drop.
Inside a former warehouse, Philadelphia School of Circus Arts head coach Adam Woolley is walking his aerial silks class through an exercise. The students suspended in 20-foot streams of colorful fabric are amateurs, but some, including baker Molly Barg, want to do this full-time.
You watch it and it's beautiful. You just want to be as beautiful as some of the performers that you see.
To give more students the same opportunity, school co-founder Shana Kennedy developed Circadium, a professional training program blending theater and circus. It'll open this fall and offer contemporary-style classes teaching acrobatics, juggling, and choreography. But the building she's now renting in Germantown just isn't big enough.
They need an entire facility to themselves, really. So our goal right now is to find a space that's big enough to accommodate those students, plus the recreational students that we have currently.
That's been hard. Money is one reason. The Kennedys only have about $1 million to purchase and renovate. They also have pretty specific needs. Ideally, they want a space that's at least 20,000 square feet. And of course, it needs to have tall ceilings, ones 30 to 40 feet high, if possible. Kennedy says it's the first thing she looks for when she walks into a building.
People will tell us they have buildings that have high ceilings, and they mean 12-foot ceilings. They don't really know what high ceilings mean to an aerialist.
Over the past year, Kennedy and her husband, the school's other co-owner, have often tooled around the city by themselves in search of a potential space, then brought a list to their real estate broker to research. They've looked at vacant warehouses, schools, even churches. Three of them, Kennedy says they're an ideal space.
Churches so far are the best fit for us because of the ceiling height and also because of the architecture. They're really beautiful spaces that have a lot of character to them, and that's important for us as artists. We want to have a space that is beautiful and exciting to walk into.
Kennedy says a lot of potential properties simply aren't on the market. Others aren't listed, making it hard to track down any information on them. The couple has also run into landlords not interested in selling, though not because the Kennedys want to use it for a circus school.
Circus people back in the 90s and early 2000s were kind of seen as underclass gypsies, and this also was seen as very dangerous and scary stuff. But there's been a major shift in filling in the whole country in recent years where circus is becoming more visible and people are seeing it as an exciting thing. So we no longer get people who are afraid of us.
Kennedy says she'd like to stay in Germantown if she can, but she's open to going elsewhere. Circus people, she says, are very adaptable. I'm Aaron Mozell, WHYY News.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside.
Finally this evening, Rutgers University boldly unveiled an upgrade to the famous New Jersey tomato last year, and now they're making it available to home gardeners. 2,000 seed packets of the new New Jersey tomato, dubbed the Rutgers 250 after the university's 250th anniversary, are now available through mail. This version is based on the original Depression-era Jersey tomato made famous by Campbell's, Heinz, and Hunt's canned goods. Researchers at Rutgers, New Jersey Agricultural Experiment Station in Cumberland County hope the new version mimics the original tomato, but with a better plant and fruit quality. Seedlings of the new tomato will be available in April for those who aren't able to snag a seed packet in time, because once the stock of 2000 is dry, they're gone. That is, until a nearly identical version called the Rutgers 250 Schermerhorn gets released. Now that science has upgraded New Jersey's cherished tomato, what prize produce is next? How about a new and improved cranberry? That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas, with help today from Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
Annenberg Center Live supports WHYY and presents Dance Theater of Harlem March 3rd through the 5th. Now in its 47th year, this classical ballet company continues the tradition with cutting-edge new works and beloved masterpieces. Dance Theater of Harlem, March 3rd through the 5th at Annenberg Center Live. Tickets and more information for Dance Theater of Harlem available at 215-898-3900 or annenbergcenter.org.
Thank you to everyone who gave during WHYY-FM's winter membership campaign. If you didn't have a chance to give, we really need your help. We're counting down the final 1,300 pledges, so please do your part and become a member right now. If we reach the goal, we won't have to come back and interrupt programming to ask for your support. You can show your support right now by making a gift at whyy.org. Thank you.